from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And the great CEO of the Orange Bowl Committee, Eric Palm, is joining us tonight. And this year, the Orange Bowl has a semifinal game. Always good to speak with Eric. Eric, good evening. How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you? Great talking to you.
Yeah, we're doing great. New era of college football. Have the playoff, expanded playoff starting this year, 12 teams. Orange Bowl ends up with the semifinal. How's it all going to work with the Orange Bowl? Next year you got the championship game, but as this playoff thing unfolds, how does it work with the Orange Bowl?
Yeah, so, you know, the original CFP agreement came together in 2014, and it was a 12-year agreement. So we're in year 11 of the 12 years. So the next 2 years are defined. This year we have a national semifinal at the Capital One Orange Bowl, and then next year, to your point, we have the quarterfinal at the Capital One Orange Bowl. So for the new model, obviously it's a multi-round. It's four rounds. For the first time, there'll be games played on campuses. So, you know, and in December, there'll be four first-round games. And the winners of that beat four conference champions that receive a bye. And those games will be played at bowl games. And those bowl games will be the Rose, the Sugar, the Fiesta, the Peach. And the winners of those games, those four teams, will advance to the two semifinals. We're one of them. We're playing on Thursday, January 9th at Hard Rock Stadium. It'll be great, prime time, 7:30. And then the winners of both the Orange and the Cotton will advance to the 2025 CFP National Championship game in Atlanta. So it's going to be different. It's going to be over a month's period of time. And I think it's going to be a lot of excitement building up from mid-December through, you know, that championship game in Atlanta.
Eric, Don Bailey here. Hey, I was just curious on organization-wise, how did you put it all together, especially when there was the double hosting, and when does it start? Like, I mean, as soon as the last Orange Bowl finishes, you guys pick it up and start right again? Or what's the process in all this, getting it all organized?
Yeah. Don, I was going to ask you, since you're on the Orange Bowl committee, but I'll do my best.
I would say we have great leadership, Eric Palm, and he gets it all handled.
So this year we have just the semifinal, and Joe mentioned earlier that next year, you know, we have a quarterfinal on Thursday, January 1st, and then 18 days later, at Hard Rock Stadium, Miami and South Florida host the national championship game, of which we're part of that host committee. We kind of drive the organization of that. So, you know, I think your question really speaks to next year. You know, all year we work, each and every year we work towards everything that happens in Orange Bowl, including the bowl game. But in that particular year, we're wearing two hats, and we're working with the Dolphins and Hard Rock Stadium. We're working with the CVBs in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach County. We're working with all the different government liaisons to pull off college football's premier event. And so, listen, we did it. If you go back in time to the BCS era, it was a 16-year window, and they were in four-year terms. The last two four-year terms were called double hosting. We had an Orange Bowl game, and then later we had the BCS National Championship game. So, listen, we're built for this. It's been our mission since 1935 to bring economic development to the area, and we have great partners. I mean, you couldn't have a better venue than Hard Rock Stadium. The people there are second to none. The building itself is beautiful, the amenities around it. So when you're doing multiple events, the infrastructure that's built there is unparalleled. And, of course, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, they're built for major events throughout the whole calendar year, and college football's no exception.
You did, Eric, and it was critical. I mean, the college football playoff expanded. They did incorporate the bowl games. The first round is on campus, but you were able to manage to keep the Orange Bowl prominent inside that playoff system as either a quarterfinal or semifinal. I just think that's so significant for our community.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's 91 years going. You know, the history of the Orange Bowl really mirrors the history of really the city of Miami. It was founded in 1896, and, you know, in 1933, this idea started, you know, getting some traction. By 1935, the Orange Bowl was born. And, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of so many generations of great leaders that took a very, you know, small event at the time into this national American tradition. You know, so from our standpoint, we've had great success through the years. But in the last 30 years, which is what I refer to as the modern era, you know, we were fortunate to get into the Bowl Coalition in the early 90s that graduated into the mid-90s of the Bowl Alliance, and then the 16 years of the BCS. And that ultimately led to today. It's the college football playoff. It's for 10 years. It's been four teams in the model, and now it's going to 12 teams. But, listen, the bowl games have had a prominent place, you know, throughout history. Up until, you know, 2014, every national championship game was played in a bowl game. So, you know, it has its place in America. You say Rose Bowl, you know Pasadena. You say New Orleans, a Sugar Bowl, you say New Orleans. When you say Dallas, you say Cotton. And in our marketplace, we're proud to say that, you know, when you say South Florida, you say Orange Bowl. So, you know, we were fortunate. The commissioners recognized that. It's hard to build those brands and traditions overnight. You know, the Rose Bowl's over 100 years. We're approaching 100 years. So they recognize that, you know, fans such as the University of Miami, University of Florida, Florida State, wherever, they know these destinations. It connects to previous, you know, generations going to big bowl games and big football games that conclude the college football season. And so with that being said, I would tell you that, you know, you're only as good as your next day. And so for us, our focus at the Orange Bowl Committee and for South Florida overall is to perform at the highest level. We want to make sure that we play in the best venue, which I think we do at Hard Rock Stadium. The hotels down here are second to none. We got three airports that are just tremendous for access into our region. Now you have the Bright Line that can get you from Orlando down here and vice versa. It's the preeminent place in the country to host big-time events, including college football's biggest stage.
Eric, one thing that's never been forgotten, and really I guess it's when you look at the history of the Orange Bowl, the big part of it was to generate tourism. But that's obviously for the reasons you just mentioned that happens. But also, you've never forgotten Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach as far as the community goes. You're continuing to put back and build stadiums. You're continuing to support the high schools. There's many other athletic events that are focused around the Orange Bowl, and I'm sure that the people of South Florida realize the support that the Orange Bowl gives, but aside from the game, there's a whole lot of other things that the Orange Bowl does.
It's at the heart. If you surveyed our members and you're one of them, you would be, very likely to conclude, A, they recognize the history and tradition and the economic impact that comes, and that's incredibly important, but just as important is the give back to the community. And so what's emanated over the years is what we call Orange Bowl Cares, and we focus on four pillars. One is youth sports and so many different genres of youth sports. Two, education, going to the school systems and joining them and doing programs that offer opportunities for the young people growing up in the three corners of South Florida. Three is community engagement, staging events that generate proceeds that go back to charitable programming. And lastly is our legacy gift programs. And it's twofold. We go into parks. We've done six to date. We have three targeted for the future where we partner with a city or a county and go to underserved communities and just elevate parks infrastructure, including football fields, the tracks, to press boxes, whatever is needed in that particular park. And then on a parallel track is going into the school systems and to go into libraries and renovate those old libraries that I remember growing up here in South Florida and turning them into innovative learning centers that have technology, have different types of furniture that emanates different types of interaction between teachers and students with students and students with counselors. So we're proud of that. We take pride in what we do each and every year. And by the way, with the national championship game, there's another wave of community give back that's really significant. So it's about for every corporation, whether it's nonprofit or for profit, you want to have success. But you also want to give back to your community, and the Orange Bowl Committee leadership doesn't forget that.
Last thing for you, Eric. Eric Palms of the Orange Bowl Committee with us. Previously, when you had the semifinal game, the teams could sort of pick which bowl game they were going to, right? How do we do that now with this new system? Is it by bracket, ahead of time what teams are heading your direction, or when the Final Four is decided, the teams, again, kind of indicate where they want to go?
It's a great question. We're finishing that first 12-year agreement that I mentioned. So there's, some things that have to be fulfilled with that agreement. Come year 13, the next agreement, I think they'll have a little more latitude to design things. But basically, the bracket will be set in early December after the conference championship games. And I do think there's going to be some sensitivities to regionality. So for the fan bases that, look at their road, they're going to do the best they can. Obviously, for the higher seeds, there'll be some deference because they've earned it, But the reality is, and you see this in the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments, there will be upsets. And so what's contemplated on the front end with, the higher seeds may not come to pass. So, I think they'll look at the bracket. They'll see, obviously, the first round games and where those campuses, will be that host it. But they'll see, at the same time, the four conference champions that they earn a bye, where those campuses are located, where the fan bases, connect, favorably to. And they'll try to create that in the quarterfinals with an eye towards the semis as well. But it's hard to do. But I think that they, learned a lot in the first 10 years of the CFP. Remember, you had two semifinal games and you had two locations. you know, in the cycle would be Rose and Sugar were matched together. The Orange and Cotton were matched together, and the Fiesta and Peach were matched together. So they could see it, and they could see how to shape it. They also have to pay attention to the other side of the games, particularly for the higher seeds, because you don't want to put them in an environment where the lower seed is closer to home, and there's some advantages there. So, you know, the team selection committee knows all this. They're given direction by the CFP Management Committee, which is the conference commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director, and they follow that as they form it. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting because four teams is probably a little bit more manageable to do when you finish the conference championship games on a Saturday night and you're announcing it the next day around noon. Here they're going to have to fill out a 12-team bracket. So there's going to be a lot of modeling, I would imagine. They have great leadership at the CFP, and I would imagine to do the best they can to, you know, speak to the teams, particularly the higher seeds, and make it as favorable to the fans as possible.
All right. Always good to talk to you. Will we see you in Gainesville?
I won't be there. I will tell you, Joe, when I grew up in Miami and I went to the University of Florida, the first game I ever saw in 1983 was Miami was at Florida. And so it was special then. I know it's going to be amazing on August 31st. So I'll be watching, and it'll be a great game.
You'll be watching and listening?
That's right. For sure.
Joe, he's a big fan, Joe. He's a big fan.
Well, my two buddies are on the other end of this line, so I will do that for sure.
All right. Stop by and see us at Hard Rock. Thanks for being with us. Always a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Take care, guys.
All right. That's Eric Palms. He's done a great job with the Orange Bowl. I could talk about him for about an hour, but we're up against a break. So when we come back, Bruce Feldman, who has a big story coming out tomorrow in The Athletic on the University of Miami and their college football playoff chances, Bruce Feldman is going to join us next right here on the Hurricane Hotline.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.